it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I don't want to sound creepy, but I'm a little bit like a voyeur when it comes to sports media, in that I will often read other writers from a distance and watch them work and go, hey, you know, this guy's good, and I create these lists that, I kind of check up on what they're writing about. Matt Baker is one of these people that I've had on my list. He's worked at a bunch of different places, including the Tulsa World in Oklahoma. He's covered a lot of different things. He's covered football, Major League Baseball, hockey, auto racing. He's been on this ACC stuff lately, and I'm interested in it because, obviously, the landscape of college athletics in a lot of ways tied to what is going on now in the ACC. We've all been through it here in the Pac-12 footprint, kind of watching everything kind of unfold. He had a great report. Tampa Bay Times' Matt Baker gave an update today on the ACC. He's joining us now. Hey, you've covered everything, man, and I got to hand it to you. Like, your versatility is impressive. How does all the work you've done to this point, Matt, prepare you for covering kind of the saga of the ACC?
Well, thanks for having me on. So I've got a news background back when I was in college, kind of working my way up. I started doing a lot more news than sports, and I got bored covering, you know, city council meetings and that stuff, and gravitated to sports, which was always where my passion was, and that's kind of helped me along the way, whether it was the Jameis Winston case, from like 10, 11 years ago now, and then obviously with this this stuff going around right now with Florida State and the ACC and Clemson in the ACC and the Florida Attorney General in the ACC. I mean, I'm checking court records every single day and spending a lot more time on that than I ever envisioned, but, you know, it pays the bills, right?
Yeah, it does. And I think in the end, too, you look at, you know, the reporting, it's interesting stuff that you're looking at now. The latest report you had today, take us inside it. The Clemson ESPN ACC triangle. What's happening there?
Yeah, so the latest is a judge in South Carolina, and again, that's where Clemson sued the ACC because there's literally five different lawsuits in three different states going on. So Clemson sued the ACC in South Carolina, saying, "Hey, we should be able to get out for a lot less than you think." And the latest there is the judge in South Carolina has said that the ACC has 7 days to give a copy of the ESPN contract over to Clemson. Now, this is going to be confidential. They can only use it for litigation. They can't, like, you know, put it on the internet or things like that. It's still going to be very hush-hush. But the fact is the contract with between the ACC and ESPN has been kept in the ACC's headquarters in North Carolina, pretty much under lock and key. There's all sorts of stipulations and rules on who can see it and how, and how you can take notes on it and all this stuff. And but we're at the point now where this document, whatever's in there, whatever's not in there, is very central to the litigation there. And the judge said, okay, ACC, hand it over and let Clemson look at it.
The reason why the ACC doesn't want that out there is what?
So, ESPN doesn't want it out there. And The ACC doesn't want it out there because ESPN doesn't want it out there. And the argument being that if the ACC-ESPN deal becomes public, then that could hurt the ACC and or ESPN later. So let's say there's a specific stipulation clause, 17.A.B.3.7, and that's something that is in there, an ESPN contract that Fox does not have, that NBC does not have, that the SEC does not have. Then when these things come up again for negotiations, be it this, be it in other conferences, potentially other sports, if Fox knows what ESPN does, then they could have an advantage. So ESPN is saying it's a trade secret, and the ACC is saying that these are trade secrets because ESPN thinks they are, and it's our job as part of these contracts to protect them. Otherwise, we would be in breach of them.
I am looking at, you know, all the different lawsuits, Matt, and of course people just want to know, is the ACC going to survive? But Which of the lawsuits, in your mind, you know, there's probably going to be an order here, obviously, that they find a disposition, but which of the lawsuits has the greatest potential to blow up the ACC?
All of them. I mean, that, I guess it would probably be either the one in Florida or the one in South Carolina, because I think it's probably more likely that a Florida judge or South Carolina judge rules against the ACC. But and we can talk about all this stuff, and again, it's fascinating. It's how I'm spending my alleged off season. But right. I don't think any of them go to trial. If there's an example of a conference realignment related lawsuit that has gone actually to trial where there is a verdict and this is the final order, I'm not aware of it. And I've spent the last couple of weeks looking through, I think, 18 different ones. So if that's ever happened, I don't know what it is. So I think the most likely solution, the most likely end by far, is that the two sides, three, four sides, however many sides you want to do in this, they come together, come up with a number between $0, which is what Clemson and Florida State think they should be able to leave for, and $700 million, which would be the max according to Florida State. Somewhere in there is a number that's going to work for both parties. I don't know what it is. I don't know when it is. There's all sorts of milestones along the way it could get there. But at some point in the next year or two or three, they're going to find that number.
Matt Baker with us, Tampa Bay Times. You know, the perception has always been if somebody doesn't want to be, you know, in a partnership, they find a way out of it. From the ACC standpoint, you know, if they lose a Clemson, if they lose a Florida State, where's the line where it becomes this isn't tenable? Or is it one school, two schools? Or if those two schools go, does the lid blow off the thing and now we got a free-for-all Pac-12-like situation?
I think that's a very reasonable scenario where it's a free-for-all. But it's going to depend on what are the terms here. I'm making up a number. If Clemson and Florida State can get out for $300 million each and they think they can do that through private equity or whatever it is, okay, that's great for them. Maybe North Carolina could do it. Could Wake Forest or Duke do it? No, they couldn't. So I don't know what that number is going to be for everybody and what the exact circumstances are going to be. But I think the most likely outcome is that Florida State and Clemson get out in some way, shape, or form, probably North Carolina too. And I think the ACC we see today is going to be very different in 5 years in terms of its prestige, in terms of who's in it and what have you. And I think, yeah, you could see where it goes the way of the Pac-12, but it could also just kind of be a clear number four that's further from the top two, if that makes sense.
The news today, ACC's got to give Clemson a copy of the ESPN contract. It's, you know, you qualified it as more of a procedural update, not a super duper big deal, but because this stuff was going to get out in any way, right? But do you think that Clemson puts the contract out there publicly? Do they share that? You know, what's in their best interest here, or is it just they want to peek at it because you know, that helps them prep for this potential lawsuit?
Yeah. So the court order doesn't allow them to, again, just like put it on the internet. They can't do that. There's something in there where if it's requested by someone under open record laws, you have to let the ACC know, and they can't give it out unless the ACC says so or unless a court says so. So this is just a very preliminary thing, and right now it's going to be confidential. Clemson needs to know what's in there because of the grant of rights, some of that says that it deals with the details of the ESPN contract, so they need to know what's in the ESPN contract to know how all of this stuff works. So eventually, might this stuff become public? Yeah, but I think the more likely area there is it would be in Florida, because Florida's public record laws are much more generous, much more open than other states, and that's why the Florida Attorney General has sued the ACC saying, hey, these should be public records. I demand them. You have not provided them. I'm suing you, and we're going to take this to court to make these records public. That, to me, is kind of the greater way this could become public than the Clemson part. And if that happens, then I think things will get very, very interesting.
Matt Baker with us, Tampa Bay Times. You've also done some reporting. You know, again, we'll talk some football here in a second, but let's get through the legal stuff. About the Florida Attorney General, you know, the rule, the NCAA's NIL and recruiting rules, and what is the state of the union in Florida right now as it pertains to kind of the legalities that point at NIL and recruiting?
Yeah, so Florida was one of the trailblazers in terms of NIL. They were one of the first state to pass laws, but theirs was going to go into effect first. So that kind of helped force the NCAA action and led to the chaos that we all know this space is right now. And then Florida kind of fell behind in terms of NIL and its law. And, you know, just more to your point, Florida State got in trouble a couple months ago, became public, the NCAA. So they got sanctioned from the NCAA for recruiting violations related to NIL. I broke the story in January about the Gators being under NCAA investigation over the Jaden Rashada NIL recruiting debacle. So there's been some pretty clear high-profile instances in the state involving NIL and recruiting rules. And you know, this week, the Florida Attorney General joined the lawsuit led by Tennessee and Virginia to kind of open these things up more. And again, just add to the chaos where there are no rules and there are no rules being enforced. And you know, this is, I think that was the third time that the state attorney general gotten involved in college sports just since December. So definitely a lot going on there. Having to wear more of a political hat than I ever bargained for.
Do you miss the football? I mean, I know at times with the Pac-12 stuff,
oh
Matt,
my God.
I found myself looking up going, I need a game. Like, just like, get me to a game.
Oh my God. Yeah. I didn't get into this line of work to read lawsuits. I did not. I've done a lot, and I think I'm pretty decent at it. But no, I miss football. I was so glad a couple weeks ago to go to the Gators spring game one Saturday and then Florida State the next week, because I got to see something resembling football. I will be so excited, you know, in late August when I'm at the Swamp for Florida and Miami, and then, you know, Florida State, I think it's Boston College the next Monday. I will be so excited to actually see football. Because I live for those Saturdays. That's my happy place. This other stuff is fun and it's interesting and it's fascinating, all that stuff. But that's not why I'm in this, man. I'm in this for ball.
DJ Uiagalelei as a quarterback at Florida State. How does he look?
I thought he looked okay in the spring game. Not great. I was honestly underwhelmed by Florida State's receivers more than anything. Obviously, last year they had Johnny Wilson, who was quite talented, and Keon Coleman, who was the number 33 pick. And there's a pretty big drop-off this year. So that was the thing that jumped out to me about Florida State's offense. And I say that because DJ didn't have as much help as I had thought. So I'm curious to see if Florida State can find an answer in the portal here to try to help them out and help DJ out, because you can see why it would work. He's got a really strong arm, and Florida State's got some speed at receiver where they can – stretch the field vertically to go with a ground game that I think is going to be really, really good. So, I'm curious to see more from DJ, but I didn't think he was great. Didn't think he was bad in the spring game. Just, yeah, okay.
Here's the thing I noted about him watching him at Oregon State, and I like him. He's a great kid, and he's super mature, and I've stayed in touch with him after he left Oregon State. I think a lot of him as a person. But I also think he takes a long time to kind of process. And I found myself in the press box, and you'll do this. You have this great vantage point in the press box. You can see the play unfolding. I can see where he's supposed to go with the ball. And he's just a click or a click and a half late in seeing it on the field. And really good quarterbacks aren't that way. And I just kind of wonder, you can almost see him thinking, Matt, now that I've told you that, you're going to hate me for it, because you're going to watch for it, and you're going to go, oh, he makes the right throw. He's just a little slow getting it there. But if they have a run game that is a run-first team like Oregon State was, and they can get him some really dangerous receivers where he can make some easy throws and get some yards and get great production, he'll be fine in that kind of offense. But I just don't know, as an NFL guy, I just don't think he has that processing time that you see with, like, Michael Penix or Bo Nix or even Jaden Daniels. Those guys just, they see it and they make the throw almost before you see it in the press box.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. I'll withhold a little bit of judgment until I see DJ in person more this season. But I was honestly surprised that he was the quarterback that Florida State kind of zeroed in on fairly early. They looked into Cam Ward a lot from Washington State, who was obviously now at Miami. But I don't know if I had my pick of quarterbacks, or if I were drafting, I don't know that DJ would have been number one or number two on my board. That said, Mike Norvell, I think he's an offensive genius. Some people think I'm a Florida State homer for saying that, but you look at what he did at Memphis, the way he would take different types of athletes and find ways to make them work. I think he's done that at Florida State too. But just whatever the athlete is, whatever they do best, that's how I'm going to highlight. And so if he sees something in DJ, particularly that arm strength, you can see the outline of how it's going to work with a really good run game, some versatile athletes. Jalen Lucas is a transfer from Indiana. If you know, your listeners aren't aware of him, he's a guy that's going to be a lot of fun to watch this year. He's got some Kenny Gainwell to him, the Memphis star, where he can just do a bunch of different things. Not the biggest, but he's quick as heck. I think he's going to be really, really exciting. You can add pieces like that to DJ and his arm talent. Maybe Mike can be the one to kind of unlock it and make that whole five-star talent and all that stuff click in a really, really big way for Florida State, which, by the way, it should be one or one B in the ACC again this year.
Have you met Big Dave yet, his dad?
I have not. I wasn't around actual football as much as I would have liked this spring because of all the court.
You're gonna meet him.
I'm sure, and again, you mentioned speaking highly of DJ and my interactions with DJ. You can tell he's got his head screwed on, right?
Yeah,
and that's really, really important, especially for a quarterback. Sometimes a guy walks into a room, they say 10 words, and you can say, okay, yeah, that's a guy. DJ is one of those guys.
Yeah, Big Dave is he means well. He's a big personality, former bodyguard for a bunch of stars in L.A. You'll have a good time. That'll take you away from the courtrooms. You're doing a great job on all the court stuff, Matt. Before you go, just us spitballing here. What happens to the ACC? What are we talking about a year from now? Is this a conference? Is it not a conference? What do you see happening?
I think a year from now, they're still hanging on. I think a year and a half, like next August, I think is when maybe – if I had to put a timeline on it, I think maybe that's when it really starts to splinter and we really see the wheels moving. I think this whole thing's going to take that long. But, I mean, who the heck knows? Are we really going to be in Power 2 soon? I don't know. There's so many unknowns to all of this. But I think if I had to put money on it, I think the ACC does survive in some way, shape, or form. But in 5 years, it looks very, very different, where we're not pretending that it's a Power 4. It's a Power 2. And then a next group in the ACC's in that with the likes of the NC States and Pitts.
There you go. Matt Baker, keep up the good work. Tampa Bay Times is where you find him. Thank you, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good stuff. There he is on this great Friday. We got some party thoughts coming on. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.